Hello, this is Mike Swanson. I'm the author of the book, The War State, The Cold War Origins of the Military-Industrial Complex and the Power Elite. In a few moments, another episode of The Great Parallax Views will begin. But before it starts, let me tell you about my book. It's available at Amazon.com, The War State. It's about how the United States became a global superpower after World War II and has brought us to this situation. Grab the book at Amazon.com after the show.
I'm J.G. Michael, and this is Parallax Views.
It's almost like the fact that you can make a ton of money off this app is blinding people to all of these criminal offenses that the owner is being held to. So I think people need to start paying more attention to what's going on so that we can hold this man accountable.
If you look at what the hours of work could buy in the 70s and the 80s and what they can buy now, you realize labor, paid work, has just really been hammered, right? And all the wealth has been sluiced into the very top.
Hey there, Parallax Views listeners. On this edition of the program, we have a double feature. Later on in the show, we'll be hearing from Charles U. Smith, author of the new book, The Hacker's Teleology, and proprietor of the Of Two Minds blog, which was named by CNBC as one of the top alternative financial websites just a few short years ago. He'll be speaking with us about a very interesting report by Jim Reed that was written for Deutsche Bank, which is the 17th largest bank in the entire world. In that report, Jim warns of a coming age of disorder that will disrupt and potentially reverse the processes of globalization that have reigned supreme the past few decades. But first up, in recent months, OnlyFans has become one of the most popular websites on the World Wide Web. Models have flocked to the website, selling their naughty pictures to consumers across the world. But what of OnlyFans' owner, who, it turns out, has been embroiled in a series of lawsuits and controversies in past years? Not only that, but now many OnlyFans users, as well as content creators, are saying that OnlyFans is ripping them off. Scott Stedman and Sophie Pierce of Forensic News, two journalists that are young and hungry, ambitious and ready to expose corruption, join me to discuss the swirl of controversies surrounding OnlyFans, or perhaps it's only scams. We shall see. So with that being said, let's get to the conversation with journalists Scott Stedman and Sophie Pierce of Forensic News. Welcome to Parallax Views, Scott Stedman and Sophie Pierce of Forensic News. We're going to be talking about an article the two of you wrote called OnlyFans Faces Allegations of Fraud and Theft. This sounds like a case of corruption, and I always enjoy talking about these sort of cases. But first, Scott, why don't you let my listeners know a little bit about Forensic News? I know we had you on before with Val Brockschmidt, but for my listeners that may not have heard that episode.
Sure. Well, thank you for having me, first of all. Forensic News is an independent news organization that I started over a year ago now, in May of 2019. And we're kind of a collection of younger people who are a little bit dissatisfied with how corporate media and mainstream media is reporting on matters of corruption and law and security. So we took it upon ourselves to start this new little independent news site. And since then, we published almost 150 reports on kind of a range of things, banking information, like you mentioned with Val and Deutsche Bank, we're still on that trail. A lot of stuff about Russia. We followed the Mueller investigation, of course, and kind of those branches. And now we're kind of branching into a little bit more of social justice issues. And I would say this OnlyFans stuff kind of ties into that. It's still our kind of wheelhouse with corruption and money, following the money.
You guys are muckraking, essentially.
Yeah, I would hope so. I mean, that's kind of the goal here.
So, Sophie, since you're new to my listeners, maybe you could tell us a little bit about yourself. You're at, Seattle University, and you're really interested in journalism, so I want to give you a chance to introduce yourself.
Yeah, thanks again for having me on this podcast. I'm a senior at Seattle University, so I haven't graduated yet, but I'm a journalism major. And for my investigative journalism class last year, I think winter quarter, I had to do a project where I interviewed an active investigative journalist in the field. And so I didn't know any. So I went on LinkedIn and I found Scott and I called him up for an interview. And then he was just like, "Hey, do you want to work for me? Do you want to write stories for me?" And I was like, "Absolutely." So this summer I was lucky enough to be able to write two stories for Forensic News, one on a possible replacement for first responders instead of police, and then also this OnlyFans article. So yeah, I'm kind of just starting my journey as a journalist, but I'm very lucky.
What got you interested in journalism, if I can ask, and then we'll move on to the article?
Yeah, definitely. I knew I wanted to be a journalist from sixth grade. I was like, I'm going to be a journalist because I wanted a job where I could travel anywhere in the world and I could report on anything that I wanted to, and I could get people's stories out that matter, because I saw a lot of voices unheard in the world. And I thought that if I could travel into the places that, you know, without big corporate media kind of on my back telling me what I'm supposed to write, if I could do that in my own independent way, then I could get these stories out that desperately need to be heard. And that was kind of something that I fell in love with at a very young age.
So. That's awesome. I'm always glad to hear that. I think we need more independent journalism in America today. So that's awesome to hear. And
I think she gave a better pitch for Forensic News than I did. Definitely more eloquent. But yeah, who wouldn't want someone like that on the team? And especially doing it at a young age, it's super cool to have Sophie on the team.
So this article, OnlyFans faces allegations of fraud and theft. I guess we have to start with, I was telling someone yesterday that I was having lunch with about this interview that we were going to do about OnlyFans, and they immediately said, and this is going to sound crazy, but there's some folks out there that will say this, what's OnlyFans?
Right.
It's one of the most popular websites, but maybe, Scott, you can give a rundown for people that have been living under a rock for a while.
Yeah, so OnlyFans, that's super valid. Nobody knew what OnlyFans was a year ago, or maybe even 9 months ago. But it kind of took off. Essentially, it's a platform like Patreon where you pay for content. But especially since the lockdown, it's geared mostly towards sex work. And so I would say like 90 to 95% of what's on OnlyFans is sex work related. So like selling nudes for money, selling videos for money, homemade pornographic videos and the like. So basically, like I said, since the pandemic and the lockdown, sex workers can't, like, for example, they can't go to the strip club and work, a bunch of other, like, porn videos. You know, there's not, you know, you can't travel places. So a lot of that whole industry kind of shut down with the pandemic. And so people were looking for new ways to make money in the industry. And so they basically flocked to OnlyFans. And since the lockdown, it's really exploded in popularity to the point where I think right now it's the 200th most popular website in the entire United States.
It's making like what between, I guess, April 2020, a researcher put the valuation of OnlyFans between 810 million and 936 million, right?
Totally. Yeah. And since the publication of that, it's only gotten way more popular. So this is no doubt like a $1 billion plus company now. And, you know, normally we wouldn't, I don't want to say we wouldn't write an article like this, but the fact that it is such a huge company now definitely factored into why we think this is important and kind of the scale of what's going on.
Sophie, I don't know if you want to take the next question, but I was going to ask you, who's behind OnlyFans? And also maybe you can attest to the popularity of this, because I just graduated university last year, and I hear that it's really popular with a lot of kids on campus now, OnlyFans.
Mm-hmm. Well, Leonid Radvinsky is the owner of OnlyFans. He's the singular shareholder of the Fenix International Limited in London, which is basically OnlyFans. And so he is the one who would be pocketing most of the profits made off of OnlyFans. OnlyFans, so when a model posts or makes a video, the site takes 20% of their earnings. So he's making 20% of whatever the models are, you know, producing. Leonid Radvinsky is the Ukraine-American porn entrepreneur who is kind of behind all of these theft allegations. As far as attesting to its popularity, it's definitely very popular, especially amongst, like, I'm 20, so I have a lot of friends who are on OnlyFans and making money off of it. And I do know some people who subscribe to OnlyFans as well. I think the most popular way to advertise your OnlyFans is through social media, so it's a very new kind of way of getting your porn out there. You're using Twitter, you're using Instagram, you're using very public platforms, which is not something that we saw in the porn industry as much before, especially with young, you know, college students. So,
and I guess Radvinsky has a long history of allegations of spam, theft, fraud, and even drug dealing. Scott, maybe you could delve into that a little bit.
Yeah, so Radvinsky is kind of this guy who's in the world of online pornography. He's kind of infamous or famous. I don't know how you want to put it. He owns another site, which is called My Free Cams, which is similar to OnlyFans, but it's more like live streaming and camming instead of pictures and video, if that makes sense. But he's been in a number of lawsuits since the early 2000s. One of them was brought by Microsoft, where they claimed that he was using, or his companies were using like logos of Microsoft to try and spoof people into signing up for his company and for his services. So he would send like millions of emails, basically spamming people that said it came from Microsoft. Or another one was Amazon, where he used the Amazon logo. And so with My Free Cams, that's, you know, another popular venture of his, not nearly as to the scale of OnlyFans, but there's a lot of allegations with My Free Cams that we run through briefly, kind of the same sort of allegations where money gets stolen from people. He uses like these sketchy offshore bank accounts for his companies, and all the money doesn't get back to the model or content creator. And he has a lot of ventures like this, all in the online porn industry, and a lot of kind of sketchy allegations that we're trying to put together into one cohesive narrative of who this guy is.
And there's also concerns about, I guess, OnlyFans having, you know, potentially lax safeguards against possible child exploitation. Do you want to take that, Sophie?
Yeah, I would love to. This was the biggest part about why I wanted to write this article. It's because there's a whole sinister side. It's not just the money. There's actual humans being exploited in this process. And so OnlyFans advertises itself as an 18 plus site. And in its like privacy statement, it says that you have to be 18 plus and there will be identity checks. But I, as part of my investigative process, I created an account and I was able, under a false name and a false email, but I was able to post, create an account and post without a single 18 plus identification pop up. And so for me and for everybody else, that should be a major concern, not only for content creators, but for content consumers alike, because you want to know that who you're supporting is of age, right? And you want to know that who you're supporting is there because they want to be there and not because either somebody else is forcing them to be there, which is sex trafficking, which is the other side of sex work that we need to discuss. But also that this person has is legal under, you know, the law. So yeah, that was a big concern for this, the human interest aspect of this article. There was just a lack. And then also, sorry, but also OnlyFans allows screenshotting of content, which means that the content that models post is not even safe for themselves. So if a subscriber decides to subscribe to a model and then screenshot her content, his or her content, and then post it somewhere else on another account, that's possible. And there's no protection against that. So,
Scott, were you going to add something in that regard? Or
yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, it's different vein, but kind of similar. When Sophie was signing up for that account, like she said, she used a kind of a throwaway name and throwaway email. But after that process, she got an email from OnlyFans to her personal email. So that's kind of like one of the more bizarre aspects of this story is OnlyFans as a company somehow got Sophie's personal email that she didn't give them. And so there's a lot of concerns there about like data sharing and where did they get this data and, you know, like how, you know, how they were able to get a Gmail account from someone that signed up with a throwaway Proton. Like, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. And not only that, the email contained somebody else's account and then a one-time access code to get into that account. And I'm assuming that they were using my Gmail for that account. So I could have used the code and then gotten into their account. So that's another security breach that...
And we've seen that, like, since we published this article, we've seen so many people complain on Twitter and to me and us via email that their accounts get hacked, because I'm assuming a lot of people are getting these emails with, like, access codes to other accounts that they don't control from OnlyFans. So it's another huge privacy concern, obviously, when people are able to store so much money in their accounts. And a lot of them have social security numbers and driver's license and everything else stored within their account.
So I want to get into the human part of this more, but with Radvinsky, Scott, maybe you could explain some of his past lawsuits. I guess in 2003 and 2004, Microsoft and Amazon sued him, and then he has a company, Cyberstania, which is kind of shady. Give us the rundown.
Yeah, so I kind of mentioned it before a little bit, but he was known in the early 2000s kind of as like this notorious spammer. So he would take Amazon's, logo and their kind of website language and use it in spam emails to try and get people's contact info or try and get people's, people to sign up for his online porn websites. And so there's a bunch of other lawsuits that continue through the 2010s where he's basically accused of encroaching on a bunch of people's patents, either for software used on other online pornography websites. Oops. Sorry about that. And all of these lawsuits essentially end with him settling. So he'll just pay out the company that sued him, and that'll be the end of it. So the information kind of stops there. But there's numerous lawsuits he's been involved with leading up to the explosion of OnlyFans.
And he also, he bought OnlyFans, I guess, from Tim Barclay. And I guess right before he bought it, he received a $250,000 tax credit. What's that all about?
Yeah, so he is actually kind of a late addition to this. OnlyFans, like we said, it wasn't super popular until the pandemic, really, or close to it. But he bought the company in late 2018 from a guy named Tim Stokely, who, like you said, he's a banker, or the son of a banker. He has banking connections to Barclays, which is one of the biggest banks in the world. So Radvinsky, coming off of kind of success with his other company, MyFreeCams, he comes in and buys OnlyFans holding company, Phoenix International, in late 2018. And that's the exact same time where he gets a tax credit from the city of Chicago, where he lives and has like a bunch of residences now. So he was basically subsidized by the city of Chicago and the state of Illinois to buy OnlyFans, which is now, based on our reporting, stealing a ton of money from people.
And it's usually popular now because of the coronavirus, I guess, you know, so
totally,
it's making a ton of money. And Sophie, I'm just curious, and Scott, you can also answer this as well. How did this whole article come about? Sophie, did you pitch it, or Scott, did you go to Sophie and say you wanted to collaborate on this? How did this come about?
I think it was kind of a combination of both. Like, it was sort of like we wanted to do a piece on sex work. That was kind of the broad idea. And then I kind of went ahead and started just interviewing stripper friends and friends that I knew who had OnlyFans. But I didn't really have like an angle per se. I was sort of just going to take it as like a human interest story and try to kind of show what it's like to be a sex worker in today's day and age, especially during the pandemic. And then Scott kind of was like, hey, do you want to collab? Because it turns out the owner is stealing a bunch of money, and like he had a bunch of contacts that were validating that. So it kind of just turned into this big thing. And then we started going through lawsuits. We started doing background checks. And the more and more that we dug into it, the more and more corrupt things came up. And we decided that we were going to roll with it.
Yeah, so basically, like Sophie said, she was going to do a human element story on sex work in the age of coronavirus. And that's something that she pitched to me as something she wanted to do. And then OnlyFans got brought up because she had, you know, a couple friends that had accounts. And so I basically just Googled it one day, just looking, you know, for information about what it was. And I saw the shell company, and obviously that's like my nerdy that's my nerdy alley that I love to go down. And I saw the shell company in the UK, and I was like, okay, this is interesting. Why is, you know, a guy based in Chicago using a UK shell company? And that kind of started the whole process. You know, we did research on who he was, did a background check on him, and that kind of just snowballed into looking into online complaints against OnlyFans. And then once we saw the online complaints that were public, we started to reach out to people who had like posted some things on Twitter, and the amount of people that were telling the exact same story made it clear to us like, okay, there is a huge story here that nobody's really covering. And that's when we, you know, decided to kind of formulate this article in a more money-centric aspect.
So, Sophie, who were some of the people that you spoke to that had experiences with OnlyFans that were not on the positive side of things?
Well, there are several models that are quoted in our article that lost money. So, for example, an OnlyFans model named Taylor got $3,000 stolen out of her account. Another OnlyFans, Alyssa Higgins, another model, she got $18,000 stolen out of her account. I mean, the list just goes on. And then we also, so not only are the models being taken advantage of, but then we also have examples of patrons being taken advantage of. There was one user who was scammed out of $600 from OnlyFans. And then there was another user who only signed up for one account,
which was like a $5.50 fee or something for a month. And then he canceled it before that month was up. But then OnlyFans charged him 10 times the same day. And then it ended up being $210 for something that he didn't sign up for or consent.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That.
And there's been issues with models trying to withdraw their money as well, right?
So that's kind of like the main thing we've been hearing since publication. We did put it in the article, but I guess we should kind of walk through like how people are losing money. So the main story that we hear, and this, I can't even tell you how many people I've talked to now that this has happened to, probably more than 50 at this point, models, at least a few dozen. So they'll basically, the most common thing is they'll wake up one day and they can't log into their account. And it just says like access denied or incorrect password or something like that. And they email OnlyFans or they, you know, reach out to support on Twitter. And OnlyFans will send the exact same message to all these people saying, a really vague message saying something like, your account was permanently closed and everything was erased. And this is normally due to an allegation of fraud or a chargeback, like someone who signed up for that model requesting money back. And so this has happened dozens of times to dozens of models where OnlyFans essentially says, we close your account because of some vague issue that may or may not have violated our terms of service, which they don't, you know, the models obviously contest that. And OnlyFans just bluntly says, all of your data was deleted and your account is no longer accessible. And the way the money is stolen is that the models keep their money in their OnlyFans account until they withdraw. So, you know, models can have anywhere from, you know, $50, I think, is the minimum to withdraw, or maybe 100 now, all the way up to thousands. And so if their account is deleted, like has happened to all these models, all the money that's in their pending balance that they haven't withdrawn yet to the bank is gone. And presumably that's kept with OnlyFans, the company.
And there's also been issues, I guess, with the security of the website for models and maybe even users. I know you referenced one model, Alyssa Higgins, who needed a refund after her, you know, account was hacked. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so there's a lot of reports of hacking, and like I would encourage people to just search on Twitter OnlyFans hack and just see how many complaints are pouring in of users, mostly models, mostly content creators as opposed to people who sign up for accounts, but that happens as well, where they complain that, you know, their accounts were hacked and oftentimes different bank accounts than they had on file, like their personal bank accounts, were switched to someone else. So obviously there was an intrusion in their account and the banking information was changed, the money gets siphoned out, and they're left with zero money. So like I said, I would encourage anyone who listens to this to just look up on Twitter, on Instagram, on Google, even like the reviews and the amount of people that are saying that, you know, their accounts on OnlyFans had unauthorized access. And we can speak, you know, we experienced that with when Sophie signed up for an account and like she got access. She could have logged into somebody else's account, even though like she had no affiliation with it. So it's a systemic problem with OnlyFans, and their security is awful.
Sophie, do you want to add anything to that? I know the data aspect of this is really kind of scary, because a lot of this data, I guess, can be shared with a third party, according to OnlyFans.
Yeah, no, it's very scary because there's a trust formed between content creators and content consumers. And if there's no, and then the third party would be the site that everybody's coming onto to get what they need. So if there's a breach of trust with the site between the creators or between the content creators and the content consumers, then it doesn't work. People don't get what they need. For instance, if somebody signs up for
somebody's subscription and then they end up screenshotting all that model's content and then selling it somewhere else, that's a huge breach of trust. And then more and more models are, they're not going to want to flock to OnlyFans. People aren't going to want to support that site. So it's just, it's kind of a downward spiral for everybody. It just needs to be brought to attention so less people are exploited.
And just to add to that, if I can, OnlyFans says on their website that they, so as part of the process, that they say they run to make sure people are 18 and make sure there's no fraud. They say they share data with third parties and they don't identify who those third parties are. So, and the data that they share obviously is very specific and very like identifiable. They're, you know, people give them their full name. I think I have the list here. Full name, date of birth, and then usually, although not in our case, when we tried to sign up, passport or driver's license to confirm that you're the real person, your address, and usually a selfie to like confirm that you are who you say you are. And in the OnlyFans terms, they say that a lot of this information is shared with third parties. So if there is intrusion, you know, to somebody's account, then presumably more than just OnlyFans has access to that kind of data, which is obviously hugely scary to anyone that, you know, has their account taken over.
And I guess before we wrap up here, there is also a whole section on drug allegations, and that deals with a disgruntled model by the name of XOX Golden Fox. What's the story on that? Sophie, do you want to take that, or Scott, do you want to do that one?
I can take that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so XOX Golden Fox was a model on MyFreeCams, and she got fired from the platform for threats of violence on Twitter. So it's another example of a cam girl's account being taken away because of fraud or like random allegations that may or may not be real. She was a close friend of Rudvinsky, and she also knew his Russian-born friend, Alex Goikman, who I guess Alex and Rudvinsky, they spent a lot of time together. So she opened up to Forensic News and told us that there was this time that her and her friend were at their penthouse in New York, Rudvinsky and Goikman's penthouse, and they saw a bag of cocaine in the bathroom. And when they were getting ready to go and they went downstairs to leave to go to a party, and the models told the two men that they found this cocaine, and they both froze up. And apparently, according to the model, they like freaked out, and they told the models that they hadn't tried it yet. And the models were starting to freak out because they were like, well, what do we just like, they didn't know what was about to happen. And it turns out that they had gotten this cocaine overseas. I think Spain was where they got it. And she also attested that they were crossing, Goikman and Rudvinsky were crossing the border into Canada, and they got caught at the border with cocaine, and Rudvinsky basically paid off the agent so that Goikman wouldn't get any allegations. So yeah. And she swears, quote, I swear on every single dollar I have saved in my bank account that story is true. So
wow,
we can see kind of where that money is going and being used.
Scott, do we really know much more about Rudvinsky other than, I mean, you describe him as the enigmatic owner of OnlyFans. We don't know if he's connected to other types of things.
That's one of the more interesting parts of this whole story is that we have one picture of him, and it's a really crappy picture, but we published it because nobody on the internet knows who he looks, what he looks like. And that's,
well, he's really kept himself off the radar.
100%.
Right. It was ridiculous, the lack of information that was available for a man with such power and such money. Mm-hmm. But what we were able to find was very interesting. I mean, he owns a lot of properties. He owns yachts, nice cars. I mean, this man is using his money. So, but we only have one picture of him. So it's,
and yeah, it's so interesting that this guy is now presumably a billionaire or his net worth is more than a billion because he owns this company that, you know, revenue is greater than a billion, you know, at this point, or, you know, adds up to more than a billion. And we don't know anything about him and nobody's writing about him. Nobody's looking into him. And like Sophie said, he's definitely using his money. He's buying a bunch of properties. We found out he has a yacht. Two yachts. Yeah. Two different yachts. And we don't know much about him. And, he obviously has, I want to phrase this carefully, but he has like Eastern European connections and friends. And we don't know if.
Well, I thought that when I heard you say Ukrainian. So.
Right. Yeah. It's not indicative of anything wrong.
Yeah.
But,
it doesn't necessarily mean anything.
No.
I mean, don't mistake me. I'm not trying to say the Ukrainians are inherently criminal.
But, you know, if you take the allegations of wide scale theft seriously, and we certainly do because we've heard it from so many people, and couple it with the fact that we don't know who this person is really. And there's like in one of the lawsuits, it's super weird. He referred, like, he was served with a subpoena and he referred to his girlfriend as his mom or something. So he was like trying to hide his familial connections. And so there's just a bunch of really weird things that, you know, we don't know who this person is. And now with this success of OnlyFans, he's uber rich. And
uber rich, but he's not necessarily in the public eye.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I hear podcasts like a Call Our Daddy podcast about OnlyFans, or when I hear my friends talk about OnlyFans, they really only quote the models who are making a lot of money. And it's almost like the fact that you can make a ton of money off this app is blinding people to all of these criminal offenses that the owner is being held to. So I think people need to start paying more attention to what's going on so that we can hold this man accountable.
And that's such a good point because they've had a lot of really famous people sign up recently. Like Bella Thorne is the best example.
Cardi B as well, right?
Cardi B's now on the platform. There's off the top of my head, I don't know a lot more, but there's a ton of celebrities that are now joining and like obviously bringing attention to the platform as a whole. And so that usually captures the headlines like, oh, you know, Bella Thorne made $2 million in one day on OnlyFans. Look how successful this you can be if you sign up. But we were trying to push Radvinsky's name into it more and focus more on the people that are being ripped off instead of like this new kind of platform that you know, major news organizations are writing about.
Yeah, that's what worries me about it. I was going to say real quick is the all these celebrities are getting into it now. And I wonder if some people are getting thrown under the bus or exploited or just screwed over by OnlyFans in some way because so much attention is being put on these celebrities and they're being catered to more than the other types of content creators.
Just real quick before Sophie jumps in, I would actually say it the other way. I think OnlyFans is courting these high name people, these high profile people who everyone knows in order to cover up what they're doing. Because like I said, all the attention goes on to the new creator, the famous person that has, you know, 10 million Instagram followers instead of like the normal college student who's on the platform, who's being ripped off $500 and is struggling to pay rent because they rely on this money. So I just think that's an important point to make.
That's kind of what I was going to say. It's like the unfortunate part about this article and about the fact that any of this is happening is that some of these models need that money. That money is what they're paying rent with. That money is what they're feeding their children with. Like, this isn't fun and games. Like, people need that money to survive. And yeah, Bella Thorne doesn't need $2 million more dollars. She's good, you know? But now, like, the headlines are focused on her and how much success she's making rather than, oh my goodness, this model just lost, you know, 18K. And then let's dive into why that model needed 18K and why this is a problem, you know? So I think, yeah, like Scott said, getting these high name ballers on this platform is kind of distracting from the criminal activity that's going on.
Sophie, there were just two more questions I wanted to ask you in particular. It sounds like you're very passionate about this story. And, you know, when I first announced that I was doing this show, some people, being cynics, said to me, well, is this really news? I mean, shady people have always been involved in the porn business. You go back to the 70s and that's how it was. So make your case, and I think you've already done it a little bit, but why should we care? I think we should, but for the naysayers, what would you say to them?
Well, why is it okay that the porn industry is viewed as shady? Why is that an acceptable thing? Sex work is valid work. Sex workers deserve rights. They deserve to be treated and compensated for the work that they do. So I think normalizing the porn industry to be shady or seedy, or that it's okay for these women or men to be stolen, or whoever to be stolen from because they use their body to make money, and for some reason our society views that as not valid, so then we excuse a lot of exploitative behavior. I don't think that's okay. I think that's something that we need to change our mindset as a whole, as like a whole society, and view these people as people who are working valid jobs. And so if they get ripped off, that's not any different from the 9-to-5 worker getting ripped off from their paycheck. It's the same exact thing. It's just that people have this moral tendency to discredit sex workers and to not want to deal with their problems. But they're valid problems, and I think we should care. Because like I was saying earlier, some models on this platform are using this money to survive. So it's kind of a life or death situation for some people.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because, you know, I have complex views on things like the porn industry. I don't really like it as an industry. I think it's very exploitative. But there's also women that, you know, they're doing this because it's the only way they can make some fast money that they need in order to survive. And, you know, you can have issues with the industry itself without, you know, punishing these women.
Oh, exactly. I think that's what this is all about. It's like, well, we don't need to be punishing the workers. We need to be holding those who exploit the workers accountable and showing governments that there need to be protective laws in place for these people. There need to be unions made. Like, it's like just accepting the porn industry to be shady and just accepting it, that it's like, it's just exploitive. That's what it is. Like, that's just how it works. You can disagree with it, but you still have to acknowledge that these people are people and they deserve a certain amount of rights for the work that they do.
And there's are there male content creators, I assume, as well?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Scott, you were going to add something.
Yeah, I was just going to say a couple things. One, another reason why we should care is that, like I said, I really want to impress on people how big this company is and how widespread this, you know, these allegations of fraud and theft are. Like, if we were to add up all the money that we think has been stolen, I think it'd probably be in the millions at this point. And, you know, obviously some of the time it's $200, $300, but sometimes it's 18 grand, 30 grand. And so this adds up. And like we were talking about earlier, we don't know who this guy is, and he's kind of spending all this money on luxury goods and whatnot. And so if you look at, and, you know, to break some news on your podcast here, we've been in touch with a couple high profile lawyers who are interested in taking a huge case against OnlyFans, and they're in the process of interviewing some of the same models that we've talked to. And so if you look at potential crimes here, I mean, it goes beyond theft. Like, if he's defrauding people based on these practices, then by definition, he's by buying this, you know, the properties and the yachts and stuff, he's laundering the money. And like we talked about earlier, we don't know what his political affiliations are or connections. And so there's a ton of like potential money laundering, you know, like we said, fraud, theft, all this white collar crime where this guy could go to jail for a long time if these allegations are proven true. And, you know, $1 billion plus company is the focus.
And you guys reached out to Radvinsky and got no response.
Right. The only response I got was being blocked by the OnlyFans official Twitter. So I think that's enough response as it is.
So last question here for Sophie. With regards to the interviews that you did and the sort of human element. I'm just curious, you know, as a journalist or as a media person, we're always faced with issues of how we talk to our interviewees. And, you know, some interviewees can get emotional when talking about, you know, getting ripped off or having been, you know, wronged in some way. How do you sort of approach your interviewees in a human way that isn't exploitative? Because I feel like we need to talk about that more in journalism.
Yeah, absolutely. The best way to go into an interview, in my idea, is just to state who you are and what your intentions are, so that there's no convoluted idea of what they say is going to go somewhere else, or like they know exactly what they're going to get within this interview, and they have the option to either be anonymous or to have their name in the article. So I think right off the bat, identifying yourself, identifying your intent, and giving them the option to either be anonymous or to be seen will kind of help them understand why you're there, what your goal is, and give them kind of autonomy in the interview. And then from there, just honestly enter it with confidence and enter it with empathy as well, because you're talking to another person, right? So you just have to be confident that the questions that you have prepared will get you certain answers. But then if you talk to them with empathy and you talk to them with compassion and you're talking to them like a human, eventually that interview is going to turn into more of like a dialogue and less of like question, boom, answer, boom, question, boom, answer, boom. And you're going to get more information from the person because they're going to feel comfortable around you and they're going to feel like you're a credible source and you're a trustworthy source and you're a source that's not going to exploit them and their answers. So yeah, just identifying yourself and then giving them the option of anonymity or being in the public eye and then making them feel comfortable and like they're respected and what they have to say is valued.
Yeah, and I was just going to add to that. I like that you mentioned the empathy and compassion bit, because I think sometimes, at least in popular culture, there's this really negative portrayal of journalists as sort of being vulturous or like preying on people for a story. And I don't really think that's how good journalists actually approach things. I think that's sort of the negative media image that we get sometimes from movies and TV.
Oh, yeah.
It's a negative image for sure, but it is done sometimes in practice. And so I think, like Sophie said, you know, staying empathetic and, you know, it's not just being a good person, which it is, but it's also good business, because if you're empathetic and you actually listen, and I think that's another key point, is like actually listen. Obviously, you go into an interview wanting to get information on certain topics, but if you listen to the person and kind of guide the conversation as to what they're interested, you know, why they're interested in talking to you, I think is important. And again, like keep the human element, but it's also good business, because if you listen to them, you're going to get good information.
Mm-hmm. And you guide with questions. Like a reporter's job is to ask questions. It's not to talk and to share your opinions about anything.
Right.
So when you go into an interview, 90%, 95%, of the interview is you asking questions and then letting them fill up the space with what they have to say and staying engaged with them through. I mean, if it's over social media, like it's a little less, but if it's an in-person interview, like eye contact, body language, like all of that. Mm-hmm.
In a way, I think a reporter, it's not their job to like be the one telling the story. That's what the interviewees do. But then the reporter puts it into a context and sort of relays it to the reader.
Yeah, exactly. We kind of synthesize what outside sources say, what our interviewees say, the context. We synthesize that all into very digestible sentences for our readers, like very short, very concise, very clear sentences that just get the point across.
I think the ideal like piece of journalism is the journalist acting kind of as a vessel for confirmed information that they hear from sources, from documents, and just synthesizing, like we said, and also putting it in a narrative form, because a lot of times you'll get bits and pieces from one person, one interview that lines up with something else that someone else said or something a document said. And so a lot of it is just organization. And so, like I said, acting as a vessel for the confirmed information that you have and organizing and putting it in a way that, and this, I still struggle with this sometimes, but putting it in a way where the readers can understand what you're talking about, and making it into a story instead of just a set of facts.
Well,
it's storytelling with facts.
I like that. Storytelling with facts. So in closing, I just want to let my listeners know how they can, you know, keep up with your work, Scott and Sophie.
Yeah, so our main website, forensicnews.net. My Twitter is Scott M. Stedman. And also, like, if anyone listening to this has a story about OnlyFans, we definitely want to hear it. So you can DM me on Twitter or reach out on forensicnews.net.
Mm-hmm. And then my Twitter is at Sophie_J_Pierce. And you can find all my stories on Forensic News. But yeah, I'll also be, I mean, I'm still a college student, so I'm still like kind of finding my niche. So I'll be writing for a bunch of different outlets over my years.
Well, I'm looking forward to what you achieve in journalism in the coming years, Sophie. And I really appreciate that you wrote this article with Scott. It gives me a lot of hope for journalism. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
And thank you, Scott and Sophie, for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us.